It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're being kept actually 2 miles back for our own safety. You can see this road to the plant at right where US 90 ends at Lindstrom Road has been closed down to anybody trying to get through. You see that emergency response, Harris County emergency response SUV right there in front of me. Now, Arkema, a chemical plant, they put out a statement about 20 minutes ago saying that around 2 o'clock this morning, they were notified of 2 explosions from that plant, and they say black smoke is also coming from the plant. EMS workers told me that people around the area, they felt a boom. They actually were the ones who first called 911. They also saw fire coming from the plant. Everybody who lives within about 1.5 miles of the plant has been evacuated. That was a mandatory evacuation yesterday. So dozens of people have left their homes. Animals have also been, you know, taking their animals, their loved ones, everyone gone from that area. I just want to mention that the chemicals from this plant are used to make basically like things like hoses, foam cups, plastic pipes. And so the chemical needs to be kept very, very, very cold. The power is out, so obviously they haven't been able to keep it really cold. The CEO telling ABC that he knew that explosions were a possibility and that it was basically no way to prevent it from happening. We just didn't know when it was going to happen. But again, around 2 o'clock this morning, the company confirms that there were 2 explosions, and right now black smoke is coming from the plant.
Okay, that's the report from KTRK this morning. It happened really early, and that's one of the first things I heard this morning was about the explosions. I think the thing that needs to be emphasized is that, first of all, it was chemical plants in Crosby, Texas, but they had evacuated people within 1.5 miles of the plant because they expected this to happen. So that's good thinking. That's good thinking on people's part. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean there isn't going to be any danger. And I don't know. I'm guessing there's probably a lot more plants that are in danger because there's a lot of industry in Texas. That's what makes Texas, you know, perk along. And it's what makes it such a successful. It has a lot of great industry. So anyway, we need to continue to pray for our friends and family and fellow Americans because this is going to be a long slog. It just is. One of the most incredible stories that came out yesterday, you probably heard this, was a woman and her daughter were seen. It was a parking lot in an office park. And the flood waters began to come up. It was Tuesday afternoon. And the mom started to try to get away with her daughter, get out of the car and start to walk. She put her daughter on her back. And then no one really knows what happened in the middle, but what happened yesterday was that they found this little girl, 3 years old, on the back of her mom, and her mom had drowned. And they tried, they were recovered by just a civilian. We talked to a couple of guys yesterday who were out trying to save people. This was just one of the volunteer boats who ended up taking in this mother who could not be revived with her little 3-year-old daughter clinging to her back. It sounds to me like she had not been dead very long, because they said she was only, I think, found about 1.5 miles from where her car was in that parking lot. So she was taken to Christus St. Elizabeth Hospital in Beaumont, and the quote from the people there is that everybody at the hospital and the officers just fell in love with her. And so, this is one of the saddest, you know, human dramas we've heard. I know there are a lot more that we just don't know about. You know, remember that terrible, awful, no good first lady in her spike heels who went down to, the flood? And that was just so terrible, of course. This was the thing that the press had to emphasize. She made a statement, not just a statement, but a promise. And this is what it was. She made it yesterday. I want to be able to offer my help and support in the most productive way possible, not just through words, but also action. What I found to be the most profound during the visit was not only the strength and resilience of the people of Texas, but the compassion and sense of community that has taken over the state. My thoughts and prayers continue to be with the people of Texas and Louisiana. You know, I have to say that when I thought that Melania might be First Lady, it was troubling to me because of her past, and I just couldn't imagine it. But it seems to me, how do I know? Just seems to me there's been a change in this woman. Remember when she spoke? I don't even remember the occasion, but it's since the inauguration. And she recited the Lord's Prayer. You know, I just think, God changes people. That's the whole point. Something maybe we Christians don't make clear enough is that somehow we've always been wonderful people who don't sin, or at least that's what we think we don't do. And, you know, it's not, you know, it's furthest thing from the truth. We are ever aware of our sin. We are a people forgiven. We walked the road that many people walked before they came to Christ, that many people are still walking. And I think we need to make that clearer, because we are saved because we made a choice. We decided to turn and ask forgiveness and make Jesus Lord of our lives. That's the difference. And I find myself wondering if there hasn't been a huge change in Melania Trump. But nevertheless, that's the First Lady, and that's what she said. Here's an article. This is a headline even from Yahoo, which surprised me. This surprises me. Divided U.S. embraces floods as chance to pull together. You know, the theme when we opened the phones yesterday from our friends in Houston was, and the Houston area, was that there was no black and white or brown or Asian. There was no division. People were pulling together, saving each other, working together. And that it had just been, you know, a pastor described it as heaven. It was like heaven's going to be. And so, but it's interesting to hear Yahoo reflect on that, right? Divided U.S. embraces floods as a chance to pull together. And so I'll just read what they say. The monster storm Harvey has managed to not only halt normal life in Texas, but also silence much of the rancor that has pervaded public discourse since Donald Trump came to power. I just think that's interesting. And, you know, I did notice, you know, we were talking, what, 4 days ago, 3 days ago, about this march that was beginning in Charlottesville and going march. Churches were providing shelter, and they were leftist on the march, you know, allegedly against racism. But now we understand that racism is kind of the bogeyman in this. And, remember, I will mention again, we saw on tape Antifa protesters beating a black conservative. So it's not really about that. It really isn't. Just to be clear, this is about undermining the order of the United States. But my point in mentioning that in this moment is that what have you heard about that march? That grand march that's supposed to go to Washington and take it over and occupy it and wreak havoc. Not a lot being said about that, is there? So for that, I'm very grateful. And interestingly enough, Dianne Feinstein is in big trouble. Do we have a clip of her? I think we do. Let's listen to Senator Dianne Feinstein. She was having a conversation. She's San Francisco's favorite politician. She used to be the mayor. She's an 84-year-old senator now. They love her. They gave her a standing ovation until she said this. Let's listen.
This man is going to be president, most likely for the rest of this term. I just hope he has the ability to learn and to change. And if he does, he can be a good president. And that's my hope.
Yeah, well, you know, what you heard in the background were boos and shouts of no and hisses. And according to, this is San Francisco newspaper, that sort of talk is never heard in Democratic circles, where California Congress members already are talking about what they see as the need to impeach Trump or remove him from office via the 25th Amendment. So Dianne Feinstein has been roundly criticized for saying that she's expressing hope that he can, as she thinks he's going to serve his full term. And she also told him this talk of impeachment was not helpful. So they weren't happy about her, by the way. So then she had to issue a statement yesterday being as critical of Donald Trump as she possibly could. And she certainly saluted and did that. But, you know, as some signs of unity, I don't know, maybe, I hope so. You heard a little bit of this at the news, during the news. There is concern now You have to understand, when they start talking about funding for Texas, the left uses this as a way to fund their pet projects. Because how in the world could you vote against money for Texas? Of course, it won't be money for Texas. It'll be money for other things. And that's the battle that we're going to face. That's what they did with Hurricane Sandy. They stuck in all kinds of stuff that had nothing to do with helping the people that were victims of Hurricane Sandy. And so you're going to hear this twisted and turned. It already is being. They're criticizing Senator Cruz because he did not vote for the bill funding Hurricane Sandy, but he didn't vote for it because they put tons of stuff unrelated. It was their chance. You know, I don't see a lot of difference. Okay, now I realize this is controversial, but here I go. I don't see a big difference between robbers who come to stores and into homes and take advantage of people during a disaster than people on Capitol Hill who would rob the people of their hard-earned money in the guise of helping them with hurricane money. I mean, that should be, you know, where are those double fines that are taking place in Texas for looters? We need like double penalties or automatic impeachment or something for those that would do that, would actually rape the U.S. Treasury and harm the people of the United States of America in the guise of helping the victims in Texas. So watch for that. That's going to be the next one of the next battles that we're going to be facing. John Roberts, can't get to everything. John Roberts on Fox yesterday described President Trump's speech in, I believe, St. Louis. And I want you to listen. Here it is.
The president's helicopter landed just a short time ago here at the White House. He chose the location of Springfield, Missouri, as a metaphor, using the birthplace of America's Main Street, Route 66, to promote economic renewal for Main Street America.
As President Trump kicked off his campaign for tax reform, a new Fox News poll finds his approval rating at just 41%. That's down 4 points from April. 55% of registered voters disapprove, a 7-point rise since April and a record high. 56% of registered voters think President Trump is tearing the nation apart versus 33% who believe he is drawing the country together. His highest marks were on his handling of the economy. 49% gave him a thumbs up.
We hit 3% in GDP. It just came out.
The president's speech in Missouri today was all about why tax reform is important to the economy, not how he plans to do it, with a particular focus on the people who put him into the Oval Office, middle-income Americans.
We believe that ordinary Americans know better than Washington how to spend their own money. And we want to help them take home as much of their money as possible and then spend it.
The president's speech today set the table for meetings at the White House next week. Tuesday, the president will strategize with the so-called Big Six on tax reform. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Orrin Hatch, Kevin Brady, Stephen Mnuchin, and Gary Cohn. Wednesday, he'll meet with
bipartisan congressional leaders. I heard it. He itemizes them, and that's boring. But you know, here's the thing, John's reporting on some great news. I mean, it is great news that the domestic GDP has increased at 3.0% annual rate in the April through June period. That's the first time we've had really good economic growth fast, in a fast way, in over 2 years. This is the news. But John starts his report by talking about how low President Trump's approval ratings are, and it goes into great detail about that. And then, oh, by the way, 3% growth GDP. So, see, this is how it goes, you see, in terms of media bias. And by the way, just so you know, Cheryl Atkinson, remember the former CBS reporter who left CBS because her computers had been messed with, and she was trying to write and report on Benghazi, and they were stopping her. Well, she's going to be my guest tomorrow, talking about what's going on with the media. Why is it that they're lying and manipulating us? So you want to listen to that. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, we have a special guest coming up, a pastor who's running for Congress. You won't want to miss this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
An old lady struggling to survive financially finally decided to surrender her husband's life insurance policy. "Excuse me, ma'am," the agent questioned. "What does your husband think about you surrendering this valuable policy?" "My husband," she responded, "has been dead for 2 years." Shocked, the insurance agent quickly explained to the elderly widow how wealthy she was because of the valuable policy she was holding. Imagine, she had been living on the brink of poverty, never realizing what she had. Do you realize all that you have in Christ? When you have Jesus, you have wisdom for every decision, peace for every circumstance, hope for every crisis, forgiveness for every sin, and success in every endeavor as God measures success.
To stay on the right path, you need real guidance and real answers. For help, visit Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
I received a call the other day from a mom who had just dropped her daughter off at college, Southern Methodist University. After unpacking and saying goodbye, the mom, who I will call Caroline, headed back to Kentucky and her daughter settled into her dorm. On the way back home, Caroline received an urgent text message from her daughter. It turns out the entire freshman class was ordered to attend a mandatory assembly. But this was no welcome to college assembly. It was a profane sex indoctrination camp. Students were told there were more than 50 genders, and they were to use the word queer for anyone who was uncertain about their gender. Caroline tells me she was horrified at the topics that were discussed, so explicit, we're not even allowed to mention those topics on the radio. But based on what Caroline told me, they've got some pretty freaky stuff going down at Southern Methodist University. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to deliver real tax reform for everyday, hardworking Americans. And I am fully committed to working with Congress to get this job done. And I don't want to be disappointed by Congress. Do you understand me? You understand? And your senator, Claire McCaskill, she must do this for you, and if she doesn't do it for you, you have to vote her out of office.
All right, that was President Trump in Springfield, Missouri yesterday, making it pretty clear what he hopes will happen in Congress. And we know now, do we not, have we not figured out that it makes a huge difference who we elect, who we send to Congress? You know, I've got two fundraising email in my hand. One from, this is from Cory Gardner, the Republican Party. And they basically say, we cannot be prouder of our supporters and their commitment to the conservative cause. With the support of the American people behind us, we will be able to deliver real conservative reforms in Washington. But of course, as I've told you over and over again, not so much, really. Not so much. Not from the Republican, a National Republican Study Committee. And then from Carl Rove, here's an email. Next year's election will come down to which side is better organized. Senate Republicans are working overtime to put together the best campaigns possible with the right candidates in the right states. And of course, that particular PAC or other PACs, that's not, it's a different PAC, but it's also affiliated with Carl, also with Mitch McConnell, have poured millions of dollars into the Alabama race, trying to make sure that Justice Roy Moore and before him, Mo Brooks, were not the candidates, because they have a guy they think is the best candidate. So this is treacherous times, and we have to pay attention to the people who are running. And we must go out and vote in these primaries if we have any hope of getting people to serve in Congress, in the House, and in the Senate, who truly represent the American people. And that's why I've asked our next guest to join us this morning. He is, let's just say he's a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in North Carolina in District 9, which covers certainly many of the suburbs of Charlotte. The primaries in the spring of 2018. And interestingly enough, he's a pastor. His name is Pastor Mark Harris. He was a Southern Baptist pastor for 30 years. He's the former president of the North Carolina Baptist State Convention. He is also the chairman of trustees for the Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And so he joins us this morning. Pastor Harris, thank you for joining us.
Well, Sandy, it's a pleasure to join you. Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. You know, I have to say that your race came to my attention through a political operative in Illinois who I trust, who's a very dear friend of mine, who has supported your race, and he wanted me to talk to you, and I trust him. I trust his judgment, and so I absolutely want to talk to you. I think you first got to know him when you were pretty active in this transgender bathroom fight, weren't you?
I was. Our church, First Baptist Church of Charlotte, is right in the center of the city of Charlotte, and so the unfortunate decisions that were made by the city council and the mayor happened literally across the street from our church. And we worked tirelessly to try to get the city council to stop before they took the steps they took that really just set off an incredible time throughout not only Charlotte but North Carolina and opened up Pandora's box here across the country. And it was quite an interesting time, but we were right in the midst of that.
Yeah. So, Pastor, just so we know, just a little look, because I cover so many issues, it's hard to sometimes track all of them with the detail I'd like to. But North Carolina, sure, of course, suffered such a huge blow economically. All the bans, the NCAA ban, all of the bad press. And the city of Charlottesville, too. So, and I recognize some legislation was passed, but there were mixed reviews about that. So what's your assessment of what the situation is in North Carolina in the aftermath of all of that?
Well, I think there's no question that, when the city of Charlotte absolutely ignored not only the people, because they received over 250,000 signatures on petitions asking them, don't do it. In fact, that was the theme to try to stop it, was don't do it, Charlotte. And they received that, 250,000 different folks on the petition. We had over 700 at a rally the day of the vote. There were about 160 people that spoke. They gave them 1 minute each the night of the election or the night of the decision. But the one thing, Sandy, that whole thing brought to life, I think, to so many people, is that even with the overwhelming majority of people asking the Charlotte City Council and the mayor, do not do this, that the votes were set before they ever walked into the council chamber that evening. And it was a 7-4 decision. And it was very disheartening. The state legislature and the governor at the time stepped up because really they were violating our state law. The state government stepped in, and at that point, they moved forward with something that was called HB2, which made sure that the city councils did not have the power to be able to do this. This was going to be in the purview of the state legislature. But then after all of the pressure that you covered a few moments ago, it wasn't long before all that pressure was building on the legislature, and the legislature ended up voting to repeal. Our governor lost his election last fall, and it was after the loss of that election that we still maintained a conservative veto-proof majority in the Senate and House and then they actually voted to repeal HB2. They put in its place a bill, as you said, it was a bit controversial, because it basically says to the cities that there's a moratorium until December 1 of 2020. But after December 1 of 2020, the cities will be free to pass these kind of laws in North Carolina.
Wow.
And so, you know, you can look at it this way, Sam. You can look at it that it was bad. They said it never stepped back and repealed. But if they had to do what they had to do or felt they had to do, they have put it in the hands of the people. And my take now, as I tell folks, at this point, it doesn't do us a great deal of good to look back, but we've got to look present and forward and realize that if we don't get involved and elect leaders to our municipal government, our state government, and our federal government who share the values and share the convictions and determination to stand on those values, then we will continue to lose. And that is very, very disheartening. So we have a window of time here, in North Carolina at least, to correct course and make sure we elect city councils and mayors that will not support these radical left agenda items.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that there is a window of time. It isn't just North Carolina. Of course, it's the nation. And I think, you know, I actually think that Venezuela is instructive for us because, all right, Venezuela is an extreme. People could say, you know, the Maduro there has gone to extremes. He shut down the Congress. He shut down discourse. He's starving his own people. But this is honestly the outcome we are already seeing. This is a natural outcome when people who want to control start controlling. We're already seeing that politicians, even Republicans, don't care what the people think. We saw that, Mark, you know, under President Bush when they tried to push through an immigration reform package that the people did not want. And it was only by shutting down the Capitol Hill switchboard that people were able to stop that, and then barely that. They don't really care what the people think because their power is too great. And you're right, this is a window of time where we better take back the Congress. I mean, take it back for people who really love the Constitution and represent the American people. Now, you're running, interestingly enough, you're running against Robert Pittenger, who has been in, I think, since 2013. He's also, he was with Campus Crusade for Christ. His resume, from my observation, looks good. So we could say that he is, he's a Christian who's been in ministry of some sort. But what has his record been on the issues? Why would you run against him?
Well, to start with, I actually ran last year in the same House seat. It was a special election because the courts had us to redraw the districts. And so I entered the race last year. There were actually three of us in the primary, and I came up 134 votes short of winning the seat last year over Robert Pittenger, who at that time was a two-term incumbent. And the thing that brought me to the table in last year's election was Robert's continued support of just basically the establishment decisions that were made. For instance, the real window or light that we saw between the two of us was his support of the omnibus budget bill, which supported Planned Parenthood. And when I called him out for that, you know, his argument was, well, I voted seven times to defund Planned Parenthood. And he did, and I agree with that. But those were seven times that some would call show votes, knowing that they were going nowhere. But yet, when it was part of an omnibus budget bill that all this stuff is thrown in together, he was willing to support that. Now, his answer was, Mark doesn't know how Washington operates. I had to vote for that in order to fund the military. And the fact of the matter is, Sandy, that is just incorrect. Anybody that knows the Constitution knows that the power of the purse lies with the House of Representatives. And no one has held a gun to the head of the U.S. House of Representatives, led by a majority of Republicans, and said, you can't introduce a defense spending bill, let it stand alone, vote on it, and send it over to the U.S. Senate and let them take their responsibility and then send it to the president's desk. It is too many times that we are told, well, we had to do this because you don't understand how Washington works. Well, my answer to that is, and I've been saying this across the Ninth District of North Carolina, it's time for us to have less of Washington, D.C., being told to us in North Carolina, and more of North Carolina's values need to be spoken to Washington, D.C. And it is just, it's become ludicrous. And he has supported the establishment far too many times rather than standing up for what we need.
Well, my guest is Pastor Mark Harrison, again, pastor, who was pastor, First Baptist of Charlotte. For 30 years he was a pastor. He served as president of the North Carolina Baptist State Convention. And there's a lot more to say about this, but Pastor, you know, I kind of hang out with pastors. I have a lot of pastors that listen. My son is a pastor. Some of my best friends are pastors. So let me just read this to you. I got an email from a pastor just this week, Pastor Don, and he said, as a minister, I can tell you that I get more pushback for speaking out on so-called political issues than any other topic, especially when I speak out against the grave danger which Islam poses to Western civilization. And then he says, political issues are not obscure debates around trivialities. They are crucial life issues. He says, I know if you get even a fraction of the criticism I get, it must be discouraging at times, but stay strong and stay bold. So my question for you is, you must have gotten pushback as a pastor for jumping into the political arena, have you?
I have. There is some, but I will tell you, I have found that there are more and more people that are waking up and understanding that this is such a critical time in our nation. We are seeing that, and I'm thankful for the church. I spent a good bit of time helping through the Family Research Council establishing culture impact teams in churches across the state of North Carolina. And these are nonpartisan organizations. I tell folks all the time in your church, you know, we've got plenty of committees. We got a baptism committee. We got a cemetery committee. If you got a cemetery, you got a finance committee. You got a personnel committee. But you try to ask, do you have a culture impact committee? Then it's just like crickets. Nobody has that. And yet, it is so crucial for there to be a team in every church. And it takes the support of the pastor to get it going, but there needs to be a team in every church to inform the congregation, to equip the congregation, to at times alert the congregation when things like a transgender bathroom issue is coming up to your city council. And then fourthly, it's important to mobilize the congregation to stand up in their community. That's the only way, Sandy, that we are going to see our communities taken back. And we're going to take the nation back community by community, state by state, and then across the nation. But that's not going to happen until it starts in our homes and in our churches.
Pastor Harris, I want to just a programming note here to my guys running the board back in Tupelo. Can you guys, let's go over 5 minutes if Pastor Harris is willing to, because I have another question I want to ask you. Can you stay with us a little bit longer?
Sure. Okay. I'll stay with you.
All right. There in the Southern Baptist Convention, there have been a lot of conflicts through the years, and I will speak most recently of probably a couple of decades ago when conservatives sort of took over the convention, meaning conservatives theologically took over the convention. Mm-hmm. But now it seems that fast forward to this time, we have another divide. That's my perspective. And the divide is that people who are conservative on these issues and who dare to even support President Trump. Now, I view these issues. It happens that President Trump supports a lot of our issues. The issue isn't being a blind follower of President Trump. It is the issues themselves. Some people think it is a horrendous. Some people in the convention, I'll mention Russell Moore, have a different perspective. They have a different perspective on they're very critical of President Trump, regardless of where he stands on these issues. Very critical of people who think there should be borders and some sort of law enforced on that, and even critical of people who want to speak biblically. I'm that's a risk. I know I need to explain that more, but I will say biblically on homosexual marriage and the rights of the LGBT community. I think there's a big divide on that. What do you think about that, and where is that going in the convention?
Well, you know, I think you have a pretty good handle on Sandy's what we've seen happening. I was a part of and had been engaged in the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention going back a number of years, and many of the pastors that led that through the 80s and into the 90s were great heroes of mine, and I followed them throughout these years, you can look at the situation and the issues that we're facing today. And I do think that there is a sense of a divide. But again, I'm not so sure the divide is with the people in the pews as much as it is of people in these leadership roles to a degree. Because to me, these issues are law and order issues that are critically important. You made the point about Trump and being criticized for supporting Trump. I've told people in interview after interview, listen, you know, it's not my job to condone the president's behavior or to condone his tweets, but my job as a congressman will be to move his agenda forward. And whatever you like or don't like about the personality or like or don't like about mode of operation, the reality is that the agenda that he has stood for is very much the agenda that the American people voted to see passed. And that's the responsibility of Congress, is to step in here. And I think it's unfortunate that the president has had to sign executive orders that have corresponding legislation sitting in Congress that refuses to be moved forward. And he is being left out on a limb with an agenda. Think of the number of I don't know a Republican that didn't run on repealing and replacing Obamacare. And yet, that can't get done, seemingly. And it's disappointing. And I think part of the problem comes back to what we talked about at the early part of this interview, and that is the establishment. Because in Paul Ryan's first shot out of the gate at Obamacare, it only repealed two of the 12 mandates. And then folks like Congressman Mark Meadows and others stepped up and got involved, and they were at least able, I think, to get four of the 12 repealed in order to get it passed out. And that's where the disconnect is. You know, my opponent in this race loves to run a video of Ronald Reagan, who I was 14 to work for in his campaign, went to his first inauguration, was blessed to be able to do that in 1981. But he loves to run a video of Reagan saying that, you know, if you go and get a half a loaf, it's better than no loaf at all, and then you go back later and get the other part of the loaf. But I always point out the problem with that. Anyone who knows history needs to ask, who was the U.S. Speaker of the House when Ronald Reagan made that statement? It was a Massachusetts liberal named Tip O'Neill. And that's not the case today. We were told in 2010, give us the House. We were told in 2014, give us the Senate. And in both cases, we did. And we were told in 2016, elect a GOP president. And he was elected. When will we start seeing action on this agenda that the American people have stood behind and want to see happen?
You know, as you're talking, Mark, by the way, Mark Harris is running for House, North Carolina, District 9. The incumbent is Robert Pittenger, and so that's the race, and it's going to be happening in the spring of 2018. I was thinking as you were talking, you know, some people think that a pastor cannot be a politician or that there should be separate. And, you know, because I've done the work that I've done and because I love Jesus, that's the most important thing in my life. And all the commentating I've done through the years has been subordinate to my faith in Christ and any chance I have to mention him. I know personally that there's no separation, that all, you know, God is everywhere and in everything as we serve him. But I was thinking, you know, the sheriff of Houston made a statement yesterday as he was observing that one of his fellow officer, or this police chief, was making an observation when one of his fellow officers was drowned. And he was just crying because they had to let him go. They couldn't rescue him. At the same time, he was warning with no uncertainty that criminals will be penalized. They will be shot. They will be life in prison for life if they dare take advantage during this flood. My point is this, Mark, that God's men can be both. They can be shepherds of the flock, and they can take this thing by the bullhorn and be hard as nails when they have to be, because that is the nature of God. It's the nature of Jesus, and it's the nature of those of us that follow him. So anyway, I didn't leave you any chance to comment on that, but that's what I was thinking, and I think that would apply to your case too. Pastor Mark Harris, Mark, thank you, and we will look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Well, Sandy, I would love for folks to visit our website at markharrisforcongress.com. There's an intro video they can watch there at markharrisforcongress.com. And I would love
Okay, well, he
my
got
brothers,
it.
My brothers, show no partiality
that was good
as
timing.
You hold to the faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. National and international media outlets covered the burning of a historic black church in Greenville, Mississippi, with Trump spray-painted on the outside of the charred building as proof positive that Trump equals racism. These same media outlets were silent when it was revealed the arson culprit was a black man, a member of the church. The media remained silent when First Baptist Church of Greenville, a white congregation, invited Hopewell Baptist Church to use their facilities for worship. Instead of racism, this is a demonstration of Christian love and unity. Once you get the full story.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The AFA Cultural Institute, a video library of resources dealing with the discussions of our day.
Marriage and family, finances, how we know that the text of the Bible is actually what was originally written. The AFA Cultural Institute takes all of these topics and puts them in the hands of people to be able to equip them.
Start your library of the AFA Cultural Institute, now available for purchase as downloads or DVDs at afastore.net.
Hello friends, Michael Youssef here from Leading the Way. God has used the American Family Association in many incredible ways, and I am so thankful for their impact on this nation. Through the mission and the efforts of AFA, Christians have been given the tools that they need to stand firm for the truth. And I just want to say congratulations to the entire team as they celebrate 40 years of faithful ministry.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
I tend to live in the future, and by the time tomorrow becomes today, it's past history to me.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
1 month, 3 months, 6 months from now seem as real as today. In reality, we only have today as a true reality. James from the Bible and the Message Bible reminds me, now you don't know the first thing about tomorrow. You're nothing but a wisp of fog, catching a brief bit of sun before disappearing. I wrote in my journal, am I living in such a way that I'm expectantly capturing all the wonderful opportunities that Jesus brings along today? Let's capture the right now moments that Jesus gives to us. They give us immediate hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at gethoperadio.com. That's gethoperadio.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Houston, we have a problem, is a phrase immortalized by the crew of Apollo 13. In the wake of Hurricane Harvey in the Houston area, it's clear that we all have a problem. Overnight, a flooded organic fertilizer plant suffered explosions after its regular and backup power went down. If this is the worst that befalls the affected region, its people and the country will be very lucky. It's also a warning of what might happen with far larger and more devastating effect if we allow our electric grid to remain vulnerable, not just to natural phenomena like terrestrial or solar storms, but to sabotage, cyber warfare, or electromagnetic pulse attacks. For example, widespread blackouts for a week or more could cause Fukushima-like explosions at nuclear power plants across the country. Houston's post-Harvey problem underscores that we must secure the grid now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. You know, Share-a-thon, we do twice a year, and it's coming up in October. So it's a while, but this is the deal. We love hearing from you. Just like when I open the phone lines, it's just so nice to hear your thoughts and what you think. And I think yesterday was one of my favorite shows, actually. I think we're going to replay it on Monday, on Labor Day, just so you know, in case you missed it, where we talked to our friends and neighbors in Houston and the surrounding area about what's going on down there. So, but just like that, when you call in and leave your kind of personal story about why American Family Radio means something to you or any of the programs, it really means a great deal. It's encouraging. And so we are asking you to call in and tell us your story. The phone number is this. It's 877-876-8893. And I'm going to ask Adam to put that on our Facebook page. Also, it will give you the prompts and tell you how to do what you need to do to tell your story. And then when the Share-a-thon comes in October, you just might hear your own story. And it will be encouraging to all of us. So I hope you'll do it. Lots to say, all right, in the few minutes that I have. So hang on to your seats. Here we go. I want to mention that there is a petition that you can sign. We're going to put this link on our Facebook page as well. Here's the deal. The FBI is refusing to release records they have regarding Mrs. Clinton's personal secret server email investigation. It's a FOIA request by an attorney in an investigation, and the FBI is saying, there's not enough public interest in this. So, you know, we just are not going to release it. And so others are saying, including FBI agents, former FBI agents, are you kidding me? Not enough public interest? So there is a petition that you can sign to let the FBI know that there might be just a little bit of interest in knowing what that was all about. So you can sign that petition at the, it's too long for me to say it on the air, so it's on Facebook page, and I'm sure if you Google it, you can find it if you're not near Facebook. And by the way, Richard Pollack has an incredible story on Daily Caller about the first year or so of Bill Clinton's presidency, and I commend that article to you. I'm not going to talk about it too much right now. It's in the Daily Caller. It's called Flashback, Bill Clinton's Chaotic, Confused, Failing First Year as President. It's just kind of amazing because in the made-up history, it's Bill Clinton was marvelous. He's like the most popular Democratic leader. But it really doesn't comport with reality. So I think you'll find Richard Pollack's reminder to all of us of what took place in those Clinton years pretty stunning. Antifa, we talked a great deal about this week, and William LaJeunesse has a report on it. Then I have other things I want to share with you. William does such a great job reporting. Let's listen.
A weekend of violence in Berkeley when a mob of anti-fascists known as Antifa attacked a dozen peaceful Trump backers.
The growing hatred towards anybody that's conservative being labeled a Nazi or a white nationalist isn't true.
According to the San Francisco Chronicle, 100 Antifa members pepper sprayed and beat the group, which took Art Shaper's glasses, flag, and hat, and repeatedly spit on him.
I'm sorry, you hate Trump?
I'm not interested
in destroying anybody.
In Charlottesville, many quickly condemned the violence perpetrated by neo-Nazis, but asked to disavow the black-clad Antifa antagonists by name, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe would only say, "I denounce any individual who commits a crime." But unlike Charlottesville, Berkeley wasn't about white supremacy. A mob attacked those in Trump hats and American flags, there peacefully to, quote, "say no to Marxism." Monday on Tucker, victim Joey Gibson challenged Democrats.
How long are you going to stay silent on Antifa? Because in their silence, it's almost like they're just using Antifa to their benefit to attack free speech.
Confronted Tuesday by local reporters, Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said,
"People have a right to express themselves, and other people have a right to respond to it. There should never be any violence involved in that."
Hours later, Pelosi released this statement. "The violent actions of people calling themselves Antifa in Berkeley this weekend deserve unequivocal condemnation, and the perpetrators should be arrested and prosecuted."
Those on the hard left, including Antifa, who use violence, as Dr. King said, undermine the very cause they seek to promote.
Beyond Congresswoman Pelosi, no other leading Democrat has publicly condemned Antifa violence. In fact, a committee of California lawmakers Tuesday approved a resolution treating violent acts by white supremacists as a terrorist act, but not those by the left-wing group.
William LaJeunesse of Fox News. And by the way, the pronunciation is Antifa. We found that out from Claire Lopez, who's an expert on this kind of thing, on Monday. If you missed that show, you'll want to listen to it on Facebook. Honestly, Antifa is a communist organization. It is already in existence. It takes its name from a group that was founded in the 30s and to fight Nazis. And of course, the battle between the communists and the Nazis is legendary, even if you may not have heard about it because your teacher may not have taught you. The communists hated the Nazis. It was a battle over power. Neither of them have a moral high ground. But the communists now, represented by Antifa, are using racism to sort of create and fabricate some high moral ground. Remember, the communists purged the Jews and the pogroms out of Eastern Europe as wickedly, just about as the Nazis did. I don't know if they had death camps, but they certainly had concentration. They certainly had the gulag. And communism has been responsible for killing more people, that system of government, than any other system ever. Millions and millions killed in China, millions and millions killed in Russia, in Cuba, fill in the blanks, in North Korea. It is a brutal, vicious system that has been romanticized by professors teaching our children. There's nothing romantic about communism. There's nothing romantic about being part of Antifa. I could say a lot more about it, but I hope that you will listen to Claire's the time we spent on Monday and the show if you haven't heard it. And this is a report by Conservative HQ, and they discovered, you know, who are these mask rioters that wear black and only attack like from the back? They only go after someone if they're if that person is outnumbered. Five or six of them will attack one person, or they'll hit somebody from the back or hit them on the head from the back. They are cowards. They are absolute cowards. It's really disgusting to watch how they fight. And so you wonder, who are they? Who are they? Well, here are two examples. GoDaddy, which is a web hosting giant, closed the account of the neo-Nazi website, The Daily Stormer. There's been much made about that. We have informed The Daily Stormer that they have 24 hours to move the domain to another provider as they have violated our terms of service. That's what they said from GoDaddy. If no action is taken after 24 hours, we will cancel the service. The Daily Stormer registered its domain with Google, but within hours, Google canceled that registration. We are canceling the Daily Stormer's registration with Google domains for violating our terms of service. Okay, so here's Google and GoDaddy, you know, huffing and puffing about, bragging, really, about removing Daily Stormer. I'm not defending Daily Stormer before you jump in. I'm just saying, under the laws of free speech, you know, unless you're advocating violence, shouting fire in a theater, you know, there are limits to what you can stop a person or a group from doing. But they're pretending to have the high ground on this because, of course, the Daily Stormer they hate Jews and blacks. And so they're like Nazis. And so the Antifa movement and Google and GoDaddy are claiming, you know, like this high moral ground. But here's the story. Conservative HQ says, we've never seen the Daily Stormer, so we will take GoDaddy and Google at their word on its content. But if GoDaddy is opposed to inciting violence, it should look at its own corporate offices. 29-year-old Joshua Stewart Coburn of Scottsdale, who appeared in a viral internet video known as Pepper Balls after he was shot in the groin with a pepper ball as he led a violent clash with Phoenix police, is one of the workers in GoDaddy's. He's employed at GoDaddy and their sales and support representative. That's his job. He works for GoDaddy. GoDaddy's claiming this high ground on racism, and yet they're the guy that was fighting police in Phoenix, one of the many, was part of Antifa, is working at GoDaddy. Another example is Ed Sheeran, a Philadelphia public school teacher. I have no time to spell this out for you, but he's been in the thick of it, screaming obscenities at police and doing all kinds of bad things through Antifa. You can read this article. We'll post it. Shouldn't participating in Antifa terrorism get you fired? That's the question by Conservative HQ, and it's a good one. So much more to say and no time to say it. But tomorrow, don't forget that Cheryl Atkinson will be our guest, and you won't want to miss that either. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.